Hello out there. Time once again for the movie retrospective. I'm so happy to be doing this movie because this is a movie that I've loved since I first saw it in the late 80s, mid to late 80s, and I've watched it over and over and over again, and I was like really happy to revisit it. It's also a very fortuitous timing on this because not only is it the week of April Fool's Day, this review will actually go up a couple days after April Fool's Day, but I just found out that Scream Factory just released this movie on Blu-ray for the very first time just a couple days ago, March 24th. So this is April Fool's Day, a 1986 sort of slasher. Now, I'm going to tell you right up front that I'm going to spoil this because you can't talk about this movie to any significant degree without spoiling it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know, you can't really kind of talk about its impact and stuff like that. One thing that I always liked about this movie, and I actually wrote like a long blog post about this a couple years ago where I talked about this a little bit, is that in a lot of ways this movie is kind of like ahead of its time.
Yeah,
because look at the shit that happened, like, you know, slashers, and they had kind of, even by 1986 when this movie came out, they were a little bit kind of, you know, fading out of, you know, I think the heyday of the slasher movie was probably like early 80s.
Yeah, you could see everything coming. It was formulaic.
Yeah.
It's getting kind of stale.
Yeah. And so there weren't really that many of them, or not many good ones, like after like the mid to late 80s.
We still rented them anyway, though.
Well, yeah, I did too. But, you know, but then there was like a big resurgence, you know, when Wes Craven did Scream in 1996, which sort of, it didn't exactly, it was like a parody of the genre, but it was like a meta type of thing. And he also did a New Nightmare, which was also kind of like a meta narrative and stuff like that.
Scream was also real high end. It had good actors in it, you know what I mean? And good looking chicks, you know, and fucking, it was well written. The humor was right and it was shot real well. So Scream was, that was a hit from what I remember.
It was a massive hit.
Like a massive
hit.
Well,
and it was really, really influential.
Yeah.
You know, which I think any horror fan would agree with.
What year
with.
Was that you said came out?
96, that came
okay,
out.
Okay, yeah. It seems like, damn, it's hard to believe it was that long ago.
I love Scream, and like, yeah. I even like some of the sequels, but I didn't really like the newer slashers that came out in the wake of it. I just felt like they
were trying to rip that off.
Well, yeah. Not only that, but it's just like they all seemed like some of those horrible 90s, like Party of Five type shows. Like, you know what I mean?
It was like Friends, but people were being killed.
Yeah, it's like it all seemed like super slick, and it's like I just wasn't into it. Like,
it was a one-shot deal.
Yeah.
Although there were some, there was a couple of sequels to Scream that I think were okay.
I just said that. I said, okay, I actually liked some of the,
okay.
I think there were four. Were there four of them? I can't remember now.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I've seen them all at some
point. Kind of became kind of like Naked Gun or Airplane, where it was, you know what I mean? How it was like a good comedy series.
Yeah.
I would think that's
yeah,
how
although there was the thing too where they had like the Scary Movie franchise, which was a straight up parody of not just Scream, but like of the horror genre in general. So it was just like a parody.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, I was thinking more of that.
That's
I was
what
thinking
I was,
more of
that's
that.
That's why I said that.
Yeah, I got them kind of confused. It's been so long since I've seen
I actually didn't really, the first one was okay, but those I didn't really like just because it seemed like the humor was just kind of like, hey, look, we're parodying this scene from The Exorcist, next scene. You know what I mean? It's like, okay.
Scary Movie parodied Scream so much, I got confused about which one I was talking about.
Well, I know. I figured that you were.
Yeah,
that's
exactly what happened.
Because Scream
I haven't seen that since then.
Scream is funny, but it's like not.
It's not that zany.
Yeah. But yeah, so we went off on that tangent just to say that as meta as Scream was, and as, you know, as much as Wes Craven gets a lot of credit for going in this meta direction, not just with that, but with Freddy, you know, the Freddy Krueger, the New Nightmare one, which was also kind of meta contextual. But April Fool's Day kind of did the same thing back in 1986. This is kind of like, and as I said, if you have not seen it and you don't want me to spoil it, then
you
turn this
turn off now
because there is just no way to talk about this in that context without spoiling what happens in the movie.
Yeah, I had never seen this movie.
Yeah, so I've seen it a million,
I didn't
zillion
really,
times.
I'm going to tell you right now, I didn't have an emotional connection to the movie. I understood that the movie was important. It was well made. It had good cast that you'll recognize from other horror movies. I really didn't find it that interesting. But maybe not for the same, you know, other people probably would. I guess it just depends on your tastes. I mean, it was a good movie. It just wasn't to my tastes.
Yeah, I feel like this one is kind of like an underrated horror classic. Now, even though the setup is like a slasher, and it was marketed as a slasher, even though the director was not happy about that, because he's like, it did well, like, financially, but he's like, I think it would have done better if they hadn't marketed it as a slasher, because that's not exactly what it is. The setup is like a slasher, and it plays out like a slasher through most of the time, but I would actually call it more of, like, a mystery thriller, kind of.
That's right.
Because it's not real gory. Like, they don't really, there are some, like, a few gore shots, but they don't really show any of the kills. Like, everything is off screen. But there is a reason for that you find out at the end of it.
I think that's why it didn't really, you know, push my buttons real hard. Because it was like a mystery movie.
Yeah.
And I tend not to like those as much. You know what I mean? If I'm going to watch a horror movie, I want a straight up horror movie. This one's got a different spin on it. And you're right. It's a lot like a mystery movie.
Yeah. And I would call it that. And actually the director, Fred Walton, who actually, he also did When a Stranger Calls, which was also kind of like a more mystery oriented. He also did The Stepford Husbands, which I think I talked about in our Stepford Wives review, but which I actually liked pretty much.
Although in defense of the mystery genre, we saw Knives Out and I liked it. I thought, even though I don't like Rian Johnson, what he did to Star Wars, I liked that damn Knives Out. That was a pretty good movie.
Yeah, well, I like...
It was fucking hilarious.
I like mystery movies, and so I kind of like this one, even though, like I said, this was marketed as a slasher. It looked like a slasher, like from the cover and everything like that. Oh, it looks like another one of the holiday slashers.
But when you get in there, it's not what it is.
But that's not really what it is, even though that's how it plays out through the most things. So like I said, the end of this turns out that the whole thing, everybody getting killed, all the murders, everything like that, was all an elaborate... Not, well, it's an April Fool's Day prank, so no one actually dies in this movie. But what it is, it's a prank, yes, but it's also the main character, Muffy, who's played by Deborah Foreman, which I'll get into in a little bit. But she is, she is inheriting this huge mansion, and she wants to turn it into, like, a country inn, but, like, with an interactive, like, murder mystery type thing that you can pay and you can come and do it. So she's kind of invited all her friends there to like do a dry run through it to see if it will work out, like the idea that she has, you know what I mean? Because so she wants it to be kind of like a slasher themed murder mystery weekend, you know what I mean? So she's running through it with her friends to see if it will work out the way that she intended it to work out. So as I said, nobody dies in this movie. Now, I think what I love about this movie, and I think I saw it so many times, like in the late 80s, I first saw it on cable, like I think it was on Cinemax or something like that, and I loved it the first time I saw it, and I taped it, and I think I watched it maybe once a month, or maybe once every couple of weeks, like for a really long time, because even when we rewatched it last night, I remembered every single line of dialogue. Like at some point I had like the whole fucking thing memorized. One of the best things about this is the cast. This has a great fucking 80s classic ensemble cast. They're just all fucking great.
Yeah.
So Deborah Foreman is in this. She's the main character. She was in Valley Girl, which is an amazing movie, obviously, one of Nicolas Cage's early roles. She was also in My Chauffeur, which actually I remember that being not too bad. Amy Steele is in this, obviously, from Friday the 13th Part 2. Ken Olant, who is also in Summer School, which is also a great comedy if you want to see that, because I fucking love that movie too. He's actually a producer now. Deborah Goodrich, who was in Just One of the Guys. Clayton Rohner, who was also in Just One of the Guys. And I always liked him, and I wish he'd had more roles. He was in Human Centipede 3, though, I should say.
I didn't know there was a Centipede 3.
Yeah.
I couldn't get through Centipede 2. Got about 15 minutes into it, and it was too slow. I said, ah, fuck it. Centipede 1 was awesome, though.
I watched it, but I was just kind of like, okay, it's gross, whatever. Yeah. And also Thomas F. Wilson, a.k.a. Biff Tannen from the Back to the Future movies. He was also in Action Jackson. So there was another... Now, I didn't actually know this until I was researching this for the movie, but the one actor that's in the movie, Griffin O'Neill, that plays Skip, who you think at the beginning is Muffy's cousin, although you later find out that he's actually her brother, he's the son of Rian O'Neill, and his sister is Tatum O'Neill. So I didn't like know that they were related. Now, I was on his Wikipedia page earlier, and he said that Rian O'Neill started giving him cocaine when he was 11 years old and used to beat the crap out of him and once shot at him.
That's the kind of shit that old Hollywood used to be like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although, like I said, Griffin O'Neill, you know, the son, who was in April Fool's Day, he was also accused of assaulting his wife in 2012. And in 1986, the same year this movie came out, this movie has a boating accident in it. Griffin O'Neill accidentally killed Giancarlo Coppola, the film producer, in a boating accident the same year that this movie came out. That blew my mind.
Tatum O'Neill. You said that they're related, right? To Tatum O'Neill, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, she was...
That's his sister.
She was a bunch of trouble, too. I mean, she was doing drugs by, you know, 11, 12 years old.
Well,
also.
They all said that Ryan O'Neill and the dad was abusive and gave them drugs and stuff.
Yeah, and like Tatum, like, I think she said that she was what? Fucking... going to Hollywood sex parties at like fucking 9 or some shit like that.
Yeah.
It was
like Drew Barrymore, I think.
Yeah,
had a similar kind of story.
Shit was been fucking freaky there going way back.
Yeah, and they were like little kids.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I thought that was kind of interesting about the one cast member in this. But yeah, so like I said, this is a lot of great 80s heavyweights. And the coolest thing about this is that all of the ensemble... they work really well together because, I mean, I love 80s movies. I like 80s comedies. I like all the horror movies and stuff like that. And even ones that I like comedies and horror movies, it's hard to get a cast this large that actually feels like an organic group or like a natural group of friends. But this actually does. You know what I mean? Especially like kind of all the main players. There's just like all these subtle little scenes with them. Like, you know, the scene with like the three girls in the kitchen where they're taking the Cosmo sex quiz. And there's like just all these little, and the way that the guys kind of like fuck around with each other and stuff like that. It just seems very natural, which you don't get from a lot of ensemble movies like this, particularly horror movies from the 80s, where it just seems like everyone's kind of, I don't know, there's just like a little bit of like over the top or stagey, or everyone's trying to be a character.
You know what stood out for me?
What's that?
The settings. The settings, the clothes. I mean, if you like dead mall videos and weird, like a retro wave, and I mean, this shit is 80s as fuck. The house they were in was in this really high end, for the time, you know, kind of mansion. And I forgot how Queen Anne, fake British, that fucking Queen Anne decor looked. Yeah. And even the architecture.
Yeah.
It looked like a mall version of something from England. Remember that shit?
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't see it anymore, but when you see it again on the screen, you realize how out of style that shit is. You only see that now in like an abandoned hotels.
Although it's a really great creepy setting. This almost reminds me of like a funny, slightly slasher version of like an Agatha Christie story. Like, I guess because of the setting. I believe they filmed this in an actual mansion, which was in... I think it was in British Columbia, like on an island. So I think the setting is really good. Like I said, the cast, they all play really well off each other. It's funny, but the humor is like subtle. And the characters are all, you know, they're characters, like in the sense that you have like the kind of jock guy, the dudes are sort of douchey, but everyone is still really likable, which I think is kind of like a hard thing to pull off. But I think everybody really does that in this movie. And, you know, you have to consider these characters, they're all college students. They're all like super, super rich and like super privileged. You know, the girl's been going to Vassar and like all this other kind of stuff. They have this massive house and all this other shit. So
we called them preppies back in the day.
Yeah. So you can see how like maybe from the outset you would think, oh, these are going to be unlikable characters and you just want them all to get killed. But that's not how they come across. Even the ones that are kind of douchey, like Arch's character, like Arch, who's played by, you know, Biff Tannen, Thomas F. Wilson, who's kind of a douche, but he's also kind of lovable, you know what I mean? And they're all kind of like that. And I really like all the interactions with them. And some of the best shit in it, like I said, it's funny, but it's not like zany funny. Like a lot of the humor is kind of subtle, or they just have like these really kind of wry or like sarcastic kind of lines. And it just plays really well. A lot of the shit, I think, is just really understated like that. And this is why, you know, when you watch the movie, and if you just think it's a slasher movie, then I can see you getting frustrated because they're like, you don't really get to see anybody get killed. It's like they always cut away. But then when you find out at the end that the reason that they cut away is because no one actually got killed and it was all kind of like an elaborate, like, it was all staged, you know, you kind of like should go back and watch it again because there's so many little one-off lines or like the way they kind of look at each other. Or just, you know, there was one part where Muffy, who they think is Muffy, she is like saying how, oh, I'm not worried about those two that disappeared, Skip and Art. Even though the guy's name was Arch, she said it wrong. But then the other friend was just kind of like, huh, that was weird. But they didn't even really like focus on it. But then you find out why later on, because she was pretending to be like an evil twin that had killed Muffy. This was Buffy. And so that was like the whole story that she had concocted. And she kind of left clues around so that the final girl, Kit, played by Amy Steele, would figure it out at the end. So that's what she was trying to establish by putting all of her friends in this situation. She wanted to see if all the clues she planted and all the shit like that would lead them to come to the conclusion that she wanted them to come to. Now, you have to like suspend your disbelief a little bit, because if someone was really doing this, like they invited all their friends over for the weekend to their family's humongous mansion, and then they all started getting killed one by one, and they think that there's a slasher, you know, stalking them. There were some things, and they do address this like briefly at the end, like when everybody finds out that it's like it was just a big joke and everyone's still alive. You know, one of the guys says, you know, you could have gotten killed because we thought it was real and you didn't know how we were going to react and shit like that. And she did address, she's like, oh, well, you know, I almost got killed on this one because there was a snake in the woods that tried to bite the guy. And it's like, we didn't know that was going to happen and stuff like that. So, but, you know, that's just kind of like a minor nitpick. I mean, overall, I just always really, really, really loved this movie. And I think, like I said, it's down to the cast. And I really have to give it props for being like, I mean, this premise could have gone drastically wrong. And I think it got, like I said, it was financially successful when it came out. I think it only cost $5 million to make. And it ended up making like at least $13 million, like in the theaters. So, you know, so that's a financial success, is more than twice. But I think a lot of people were frustrated because they were like, well, they thought it was going to be a slasher and it's not all that gory. And then at the end, you find out it's like, oh, just kidding. And some people were kind of like, oh, it was like it was all a dream ending. But in a way, I think this movie was really ballsy to just like commit to that premise, like all the way through, like nobody got killed. You know, it's called April Fool's Day, for fuck's sake. So I respect that they actually took that premise and stuck with it. Because now there was another version, apparently there was another version of the ending shot where, you know, yes, you find out that all the murders were fake, but then Skip, the one character played by Griffin O'Neill, there's a version of it where he actually kills Muffy, his sister, for real to get the inheritance. And they were going to end it like that. Now, Paramount Pictures, who put this out, because this was the same production company, same producer that did Friday the 13th, which is why they got Amy Steele to be in this, because some of the same people were involved behind the scenes. But Paramount said, you know, it's like this has been such like a fun, lighthearted kind of movie up to that. It's like they thought it would be kind of a bummer like to end it after, you know, all the murders were fake, but no, oh no, there's a real one at the end. So they took that part out. Now, the novelization does have that. And I've heard, I didn't even know until today that there was a remake of this movie. It was made in 2008, and I think it went direct to DVD. I haven't seen it, but by all, like every other review I've seen of it has said it's just terrible. Most people even said it was worse than the Prom Night remake. And I'm like, wow, that's pretty bad. But but I haven't seen it, so I don't know. Apparently, they went that direction. The remake went that direction where there was an actual murder at the end, even though all the murders leading up to that had been fake. But I'm glad in some ways I don't like a lot of studio meddling because usually it's for the worse. But in this case, I think it was the right decision because the whole premise of the movie is that it's all a joke. And I would have been kind of disappointed if they had been like, oh, okay, no, it's really a slasher movie and we're really going to kill somebody at the end because we don't want everybody to get bummed out or feel ripped off because all of them were fake. You know what I mean? I feel like this is almost kind of like a meta slasher because when you watch a slasher movie, you know, contextually in the movie, the murders are real. But they're not. They're fake. It's a movie. So I feel like I like that this one was kind of like honest about that. You know what I mean? Because it's like, you know, one of the guys in there is like, he's the special effects guy. He helped Muffy set it all up. And he had like all these fucking appliances, like, on his face, so it looked like his eyeball was popping out and shit like that. So it's like, this is almost like the most honest slasher ever made, because no one actually died in it. And it's like, it's almost kind of like it's showing, like, the strings, or it's showing, like, the behind the scenes, just in universe. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Maybe that's, like, kind of too deep for a movie like this, but, I mean, well, that's how I kind of took it anyway. That's why I was delighted by finding out that it was all fake at the end. I just thought, I maybe because the characters were likable and I don't want them to get killed, unlike the Friday the 13th movies, where I'm just like, yes, please just kill them as quickly as possible.
I can understand how you, I can understand why you liked it and why it's an important movie. To me, I it didn't really do much for me, but it was a well-made movie.
Yeah, it's it looks really cool, and like I said, I would call it more just, you know, if you're going to see it, and obviously, you know, you've probably already seen it, otherwise, you know, I just spoiled it for you, so sorry about that, but I would not call it a slasher movie, and like I said, the director would not call it a slasher movie. He was making, like, a fun, like, suspense thriller, you know, with some comedy in it. That was kind of like, it's not exactly parodying slasher movies, although it does do some shit like it throws a cat at one of the characters and stuff, which I think is a direct parody of that fucking scene from Friday the 13th part 2, right? Where that, where the cat jumps in.
Yeah.
So they do shit like that.
Yeah.
But I think they do it, you know, they don't do it in a way like, hey, look what a joke this is. But it's like, I just think the fact that it's in there, they were just kind of like winking at the audience, kind of.
Because they had seen that movie.
Because they had seen that movie. And it was the same production company. So I think they were kind of like homaging that.
Right.
I don't think it was meant to be taken seriously. But, you know, the thing I like about this one, like I said, it's that makes it not exactly a parody. Because, like I said, I didn't like, you know, those scary movie, like those parodies, just because they seemed really witless, and it just seemed like, it seemed like not jokes. It just seemed like, here's like an over the top parody of this scene from whatever movie, and then they just moved on and did another one. It was just like a bunch of like dumb set pieces.
I think the target audience is very young though.
Yeah, definitely. Movies. This one, the humor is a lot more subtle. The humor is, it's like they're also, like, all the characters, I think I said this in my blog post, like, all the characters have these, like, ridiculous, like, waspy names, like Muffy St. John.
Yeah, it's, and they're pretty repulsive.
Yeah, actually. And it's like, but like I said, it kind of works because the characters are still, like, still likable, even though they're these super privileged, like, rich kids.
Talking about those comedy movies, though, like Scary Movie and Airplane, what's weird is that humor ages very badly in film. Yeah. I mean, some of the shit that I thought was hilarious back in the 80s, you go back and watch it, and you're like, you can't even get a laugh out of you. I guess the Overton window changes so much about what's funny, what isn't. You know what I mean? Like, I remember how outrageous Eddie Murphy was, his stand-up act, but you hear it now, and you can hear that anywhere, just the way everybody talks.
Yeah, I mean, it was shocking at the time.
Shocking at the time, because you didn't hear it on television.
It's, but, you know, it's just kind of the same thing with seeing horror movies. It's like, you have to see things in the context of when they came out. It's like, if you see, like, Psycho nowadays, it's like, nobody thinks that's super gory. No, but back then, it was, like, really shocking because no one had ever seen anything like the shower scene before.
Yeah, so, things don't age well. A lot of things don't age well.
They don't.
If something can last 20, 30 years, you know it was timeless. It's a fucking timeless classic.
Yeah.
If it can last that long. Most shit ages out within 3-4 years.
Yeah. But that's why I think this one kind of holds up still, because they weren't trying too hard with the humor. Like, a lot of the humor just comes from, like, just random, like, funny shit they say to each other. It's not try hard.
Yeah.
Like, the Scary Movie, you know, franchise seemed to me very try hard. Like, they were screaming in your face, this is funny, you know what I mean? And I don't really like that type of thing.
I tried to watch Mel Brooks' History of the World again, and his shit wasn't funny. I got about 15 minutes in it, and I go, man, this is not funny.
Although I must say that Young Frankenstein, still funny.
Is it still funny? Yeah. History of the World's not funny.
I haven't seen it since I was a kid.
I might have burned it out because I had seen it so many times, and maybe it's funny when you're a kid, so you're so amped up, you know, and Brooks was on so much coke. Maybe you just have to be just, like, totally coked to the gills to think that shit's funny. I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah. But like I said, some of his movies are still funny. Blazing Saddles is still funny. Young Frankenstein is still funny.
That was a good movie, though.
I think Spaceballs is still funny.
I haven't seen that in forever. I didn't think that was funny at the time, actually. But, I didn't think it was funny.
But yeah, so, you know, humor's subjective, obviously. Yeah. But I always liked April Fool's Day because it's clever, it's self-aware, but it's not pointing a finger at its self-awareness, which I think Scream did. And I love Scream, but Scream was like very overt about its self-awareness and what it was doing and like how it was trying to be ironic. This one, not so much. You know, a lot of it, like I said, it's just very understated, but there's like a lot of humor, like in a lot of the little subtle interactions and like shit going on in the background and like different things that characters do and stuff like that. So as I said, if you haven't seen it, I'm glad that it's finally getting like a fucking nice Blu-ray release, because prior to this, I don't even think, yes, it was on VHS because, you know, it was in every video store. It had great cover with that fucking braid with the noose, you know, really iconic. But up to this, I think it didn't even get like a DVD on its own until 2013. Prior to that, it kept getting thrown on discs with like other movies. You know what I mean? Like it was on a set with My Bloody Valentine, you know, because April Fool's Day, My Bloody Valentine. I think it was on like a disc with Graveyard Shift, that fucking Stephen King movie with all the rats, and Tales from the Dark Side, which is actually a good movie. But so I'm glad that like Scream Factory, good old fucking Scream Factory, man, they're so rad. They just released this on Blu-ray, and hopefully, I don't know if there's going to be a lot of special features on it or something. I might have to pick this up because I want to see like some behind the scenes shit, because I really do love a lot of these actors. You know what I mean? Especially Deborah Foreman, and she's fucking great in Valley Girl. And I told him, he's never seen Valley Girl either. I'm like, you definitely have to see fucking Valley Girl.
Oh, I'm excited about seeing that.
Oh, well, Nicolas Cage is in it. He plays like a punk rocker.
But is he act crazy as fuck? Does he cage the fuck out?
Not, well, he's real young. Okay. So he's not, kind of, I don't know. He's kind of crazy in it, but not like Mandy crazy. You know what I mean? He's kind of more like awkward a little bit, but also super cool.
Here's another plug. If you guys haven't seen Mandy and you haven't seen Color Out of Space, fucking they're streaming. See that shit? I think Shudder has them both, right?
Well, Shudder has Mandy.
It just has Mandy. It doesn't have Color Out of Space.
We bought that.
Color Out of Space was on Xbox, but you gotta pay for that. That's right.
They have it too.
Those two movies are awesome. Caging the fuck out. They're made by the same company. They're both really good movies. I probably would watch Mandy first, but
I'm just surprised that you'd never seen Valley Girl, considering Nicolas Cage was in it. I mean, it came out in 83. Fucking great soundtrack too. It's
like, I don't remember it. Modern English. Maybe if I saw it again, maybe it was something that they had on.
It's like a teen romance type of thing, but it's like easily one of the best ones of the 80s. I liked it better than like some of the John Hughes movies.
83, I was getting ready to go to Brazil.
Yeah.
So, no, I didn't. I probably didn't see that.
Yeah.
And because then once I got in Brazil, they wouldn't play that in Brazil. That's America specific.
Yeah.
So, I never got to see that one.
It is. It's American as fuck, that movie. Yeah. But yeah, it's definitely a good one. But yeah, if you haven't seen this one, I really recommend it. If you like slasher movies, or especially like underrated slasher movies, like it's not gory. It's, you know, there's not like a lot of nudity or anything like that. But it's just a really good like mystery, and it's fun. You know what I mean? It's a fun movie. It's got a great fucking 80s specific cast. You will recognize pretty much everyone in this movie from other movies of the 80s if you're into that kind of thing. And they just play really well together. And it's just a really, really fun movie. Like I said, I've seen it probably a zillion times, and I still think of lines from it, you know, randomly. And I was like happy to get to see it again. And I was like, God damn it, this is like the perfect week to do it because it's just coming out on Blu-ray and it's April Fool's Day week. So yeah, but definitely, I would definitely recommend it. Tom didn't really give a shit about it, but I really like it a lot. So, you know.